Now, broadcasting on Radio Star Worldwide, it's time for Dr. Rademacher's Prescription for Transformation. Let's tap into your own authentic genius and live the life you desire. Join Dr. Rademacher for an enlightened conversation about our brain intelligence, our body intelligence, and our energy intelligence. And now, here's your host, Dr. Bart Rademacher.
Welcome, welcome to all you loyal listeners. So excited to be here today again with Wendy, my producer and fellow in arms and making changes and helping changes in the world. This is very exciting for me. How are you doing, Wendy?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing great. Out here in the Bahamas, I hear you've got nice rain over there in Arizona.
Oh, I'm loving it. Yeah, it is so gorgeous. We had a huge haboob. A haboob. Do you have haboobs where you live?
Because I have no idea what that is.
A haboob is a sandstorm. And because we're in Arizona, it's always really hot and dry. And so we get these huge sandstorms called haboobs, and you can watch them like completely come in and like completely engulf the city. It's the most beautiful thing. Kind of scary at the same time. It's like a horror movie, but it's cool. Yeah. So we had a huge haboob 2 days ago.
That's the weirdest thing. Where does that come from?
If I'm not mistaken, the haboob, the word comes from the Middle East.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, so they've been using it here ever since. Well, I'm second generation Arizona native, so we've been using it here ever since I can remember.
So do you run for cover? Is that what you do?
Well, I'm usually inside. So like from here, because we're on the sixth floor, I just sit back and I watch. It's awesome.
Everything gets dusty and it's crazy.
Everything gets completely, the skies turn brown. You can watch it, the brown come in, and it just... And then once it hits you, like everywhere you look, you can't see too far in front of you. It's just brown. It's really wild. But it's neat to watch it from, you know, the sixth floor of a high rise.
Well, my only experience is with Mission Impossible. I think it was with Mission Impossible 3. They had one of these chase scenes where there was a haboob.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's so fun, though. It's so fun. If you ever get a chance, you know, come out to Arizona during the monsoon season and you'll be able to experience one of those. It's beautiful. It's weird that it's beautiful, but it seriously is.
Well, I'm one of those photographers. I love capturing things like that. For me, that's the joy of life, you know, capturing the essence of all things that are and all essences of who we are. So that's what's always so much fun.
You know what? What was it? Ed actually caught one. On camera, and he posted it. It was really neat. It was really, really neat. And it's you can watch like all the mountains get engulfed, and then all of a sudden you'll see like Johnson Lincoln Hospital get engulfed, and then all of a sudden you see Camelback is gone, and it just, yeah, it's pretty wild.
But then you're happy when it's all back, right?
Yeah, and it doesn't last very long. You know, it's once the dust settles, we're good.
Well, this chair has got its mind of its own. It keeps on. So if I shake around, it's because it's crazy.
Oh, I just thought I had that effect on you.
Oh, you do. I mean, and the chair, both of us. And we're very grateful for it, too. So anyhow, I do want to get started. It's just you and me today.
Perfect.
And, you know, I'm really excited. I'm hiring a new assistant so we can actually get more people to be interviewed, because I think that's what's so much fun. Mm-hmm. But as an introduction, once again, Wendy knows who I am, but for those new listeners, I am Dr. Bart Rademacher, and this is your prescription for transformation. Hashtag real people, hashtag real conversations. And, you know, it's so much fun for me because I've been in training for all my years and working in so many different areas, being exposed to so many different countries, languages, people, cultures, ideas, religions, concepts, everything else. And what I come to realize is that there's such a diversity out there. You know, how is it that you can just stick with one thing and be totally happy with your life? Now, that is certainly possible. But I think one thing that we all want and we all desire is divine happiness. Mm-hmm. And really, truly, the way to get that is to resolve whatever makes us unhappy. But it still is all about the stuff that you don't know. And really, the stuff that you don't know that you don't know that's going to make the difference. And what's interesting with this whole prescription for transformation is I like to, you know, position it for people just so that there's a good reference for that is, you know, are you going to be that an accidental tourist in your own life that you just, you know, bump into the haboobs like this by chance and enjoy something quite spectacular? Or are you actually going to make a trip to a place where they have those and actually experience that? So what I'm saying in a different way is, are you just going to wait for things to accidentally happen to you? Or are you going to be that guided, you know, tour guide, guiding your own life and really finding and searching the things that really make a difference for you? Because at the end of the day, it's sort of like that rocking chair challenge. You know, if you're old and you're rocking chair and you look back and you realize, wow, you know, I wish I'd done those things, or boy, did I have a life. Mm-hmm. And now I got my grandchildren or friends that can listen to all the incredible stories. I mean, which one do you want? You know? And so it really comes down to programming. What is that programming that we're actually running? Just like a computer. A computer runs programs. And unfortunately, sometimes it gets derailed, like what happened to me the other day with Delta Airlines. I'm sure they had a virus in there or something.
What happened?
Well, Delta Airlines, they had an outage, and apparently it was because of some sort of computer glitch, some sort of software problem. My guess is they were probably hacked or something. I don't know. But all the Delta flights were canceled and all over the world because the computers were down. And as a result of that, there was a crossover, a fall over to all the other airlines, which I was flying with American. And so I was delayed, and I actually had to stay overnight in Dallas because of all these problems.
Oh, wow.
And it's really, you know, it's an aberrant, you know, program that's occurring that's kind of derailing the system. And we have those as well. And where do we get these programs from? We get these programs from other people, typically, or quite frankly, from media. You know, watching TV, there's an interesting statistic. If you look at high school kids, they have been exposed to an excess, I believe it's 250 or 350,000 commercials up to that point in their life. And just think about it. Just think about the influence that marketers have on kids, on mm-hmm. people. So these are programs. And I mean, just like you have your programs, I mean, you've got a fascinating program. But you also had a program that was extremely successful for you to overcome some incredible challenges. Mm-hmm. And other people with the same challenges with different programs don't have that success. So let me ask you this, actually. I don't want to be ranting all along. You know, I want you to help me just so we can fill space. No, but I do want to know. So if you were to go back, and for any of the listeners to understand this, is that Wendy is an incredible person, because for so many years, when she was born, you know, hearing impaired, right? I mean, were you completely deaf or not?
I could hear murmurs. And so I went to the Mayo Clinic, and I have tympanoplastesis. It took them 13 surgeries to get where I'm at now. But yeah, so like each surgery, it would get better and better and better. And yeah, so I mean, so my hearing was progressive, I guess you could say that. And now it's amazing. Oh my gosh, it is actually a little bit too good right now, because like, I'm not good with lots of noise.
But you ever catch your family who are used to you not being able to hear before, whispering behind your back, and you hear everything?
They all yell. They're like, when they talk to me, they yell at me, and I'm like, I can hear you. It's like, because when you go from not hearing to hearing, and then you're like, why is everybody yelling at me? And it's because I guess they're used to speaking so loud at me that I was always getting yelled at, and I hated it. So
I love the story that you shared with me one time when you were in at a party or an event, and there were people talking about you, and you could follow their conversation because you could lip read so well.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a very interesting thing. And even now, I mean, I still do that. I'm a lip reader, and I sign too. So it's one of those things where a lot of times I'm in public, and I find myself gravitating towards people who are hearing impaired, and I'll just sign, and I'll talk to them that way. And I'm like, okay, this is good. It's nice. It's quiet. And I tend to read people's facial expressions more, and I am very, very much using facial expression without realizing it. So mm-hmm. if I don't like something, everybody knows it before I say anything, because my face is like, ooh. You know.
Well, you know, it's interesting when you talk about language and communicating, and again, most people don't even realize this, is that words only account for 7% of our communication. Mm-hmm. You know, when body language is about 55%. And it's phenomenal, because just like you said, you know, people can already get the communication of what you want to tell them just by the way you're behaving or you're acting or by your facial expression.
Mm-hmm, definitely. It's neat.
I'll make sure I blow you up so I can see you clearly.
I don't know. Did my hair look okay today?
No. No, you're perfect. You always look perfect. So getting back, you know, you obviously had a program that was really successful. Mm-hmm. And again, this is really what this whole platform is to inspire people to realize is that there's other programs out there that you can tap into and change your life. And the way that I always like to frame it is simply this, is that we live in an intelligent universe. Nothing happens by random. As much as you think things are just chaotic and there's all this randomness, it's not there. There's a basically cause and effect of everything. There's an energy, there's a vibration to everything. And there's an intelligence about that. And so all we have to do is just understand what that intelligence is. And what's interesting, sometimes I look at the perspective of what we have today with all of our technologies and seemingly much more intelligent than what it was several centuries ago. But then you look at some of the ancient wisdoms and things that people were able to do then with much less technology, having a much higher intelligence or perception awareness of what's around them. And we'll talk a little bit about that later on. So in the end, you know, whose program, whose prescription are you running, you know, in your life? And so you get to choose what those are. And you get to choose also the type of intelligence that you want to tap into. And, you know, what is intelligence? I mean, intelligence is all over the place. But the way that I frame it, you know, from my conversations, and really the topic of today is that, you know, what's the future of medicine? Mm-hmm. And the future of medicine, in a sense, as I perceive it and start promoting it, is that the doctor of the future will not be prescribing drugs, will not be doing surgery. I mean, how is that absolutely possible? Well, look at what going to happen 2,000, 3,000, 5,000, 30,000 years ago when you had a medicine men or women performing things, not necessarily using drugs, not necessarily using or doing any kind of surgery, still creating the changes, you know, within the people so that they get the healing. Mm-hmm. So what was possible then is also possible now. It almost seems that we've forgotten so much. You know, replace it with this scientific dogma that everything has to be proven, and there is so much more, you know, about it. And so, you know, intelligence comes with a lot of different, you know, definitions. But the way that I like to do it or share it is you've got the brain intelligence, you know, the mind, you know, the programs again that we're using. Mm-hmm. You've got the body intelligence, you know, the entire physiology that we have. I mean, when you think about it, we've got like anywhere between 30 to 70 trillion cells in our body, about 200 different types of cells. So you got to think there's some kind of autonomy, independence of action, and intelligence there, whatever it is, however you want to define it. I mean, it's not perhaps thinking intelligence, but there's an intelligence. And as a physician, I've been a physician for almost 30, 40 years now, and I'm not quite 40, that'll make me really old. And it's just interesting how we're just only now scratching the surface of how our bodies function. And we've looked at it in a very, you know, pragmatic way of what we've learned over the years, but now we're understanding it so much more. And so the body intelligence there, and then finally, you know, it's all that energy intelligence. Mm-hmm. What is that really all about? So, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Do you have any questions for me so that I can interrupt my talk here?
Well, you know, you said you've been a physician for 30 plus years.
Uh-huh.
So if you compare to what you learned or how you were taught when you first started out versus now, is there a big difference in how you approach things or how you teach things? Because I know you teach a lot of people too. Right. In comparison to when you learned?
You know, that's a really great, great question. And the answer actually is I always thought differently. Mm-hmm. And I guess it came from the fact that I grew up in 5 different countries, speak 4 different languages.
Wow.
And not unlike you, you know, you speak many different languages too.
Mm-hmm.
And it just allows you to have a much deeper awareness or appreciation of, if you will, of the world around you. Mm-hmm. It's just the same if you're painting in black and white versus, you know, 3 colors versus 5 or just all the colors in the rainbow. And there are so much more abilities to appreciate the world around you, but also to express yourself in that world when you have all the colors that you want versus just black and white. And so in one respect, I mean, medicine is very limited. Why? Because it's strictly based on science, and it's strictly based on really experience and data. And there's a reason for that, and they're all good reasons, because these are people who have dedicated their entire lives to do the right thing. As a physician, you know, within the Hippocratic Oath, it's really about do no harm. And so the commitment, the obligation, the dedication of physicians on all time is really to help people. And the best way they can do that is with scientific fact. I mean, just by doing things by random is kind of dangerous. Mm-hmm. So, whereas the old medicine men didn't have that. They really went with a different kind of approach, and a lot of it, I'm not going to go into depth into this because for so many people it's just so esoteric and foreign that they wouldn't understand that, and I don't even understand that, but I have a respect for it. I have a respect for the fact that shamans can heal people. These are medicine men. There's shamans all over the world, and there's evidence that there have been shamans, you know, over the last 300,000 years, and so that tells you something, that these people had a certain kind of intuition of energy, of life, in a way that we don't even appreciate today. And they could change people's lives. Same thing when you hear these miraculous cures of people that basically, you know, received the death sentence from their physicians that said, you know, you've only got a month or two to live. And you have these stories that people just make a decision in their life that they made 20 years ago, mm-hmm. and we're told that they weren't going to live more than a month. Now, 20 years later, they're still alive, mm-hmm. and not because of any help of any kind of medical treatment. In fact, they stepped away from medical treatments, and that's not a recommendation that I'm giving to anyone. And what my personal experience was, because I went back to medical school, I went to medical school when I was 17 back in Holland, the Netherlands, in one of the top medical schools in Europe, in Rotterdam. And what was fascinating for me was that I had an aptitude for all the different specialties. I had a very keen interest in all the different things, but also what wasn't medical. And because in Holland, there's a lot of alternative stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And so it allowed me to make this decision that, to me, it didn't matter how we got to the end point, you know, how we got to that healing or the curing, as long as we got there, whether it's traditional medicine or alternative medicine, you know, or the combination of that, you know, let's just tap into all of that to get the results. So I've always thought that way. But the challenge today, and what has changed, is that for so many years, I'm, you know, required to work in a certain environment, whether it's a medical institution, university institution, academic institution, or within the guidelines of what we call medical ethics or medical law in this country. It's very restrictive. And so you have to be careful. You can't really, you know, walk outside of the lanes, in a sense, to do something that you think is worthwhile and beneficial, mm-hmm. Because, you know, it may not work, and then you're in trouble. And so that's the challenge. And so many people are not willing to, you know, think out of the box, work out of the box, treat out of the box, because of the environment that we work in.
Wow. But you do think outside of the box.
All the time.
That's wonderful.
All the time. And this is now thinking outside of the box. And for me, it's possible now because I made a decision, actually my early 20s, that I would expand my horizons at a certain point. And that point was 15 years after residency. And that's the decision I made also before I ended residency. And so that's where I'm at now. And so that's why now I talk about, you know, brain intelligence, body intelligence, and energy intelligence. And what's fascinating, when you just look at, let's say, brain intelligence, and, you know, what is that? You know, I mean, we have like 70,000 to 90,000 different thoughts every single day, individual thoughts every single day, of which 80 to 90% are the same ones you had yesterday.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome. So, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
We're not very original, are we?
I'll start, you know, tallying that. So mm-hmm. next time I'll see all your tallies, your 70,000 thoughts.
Oh, you know, I'm the type of person, like, I woke up at 2 o'clock this morning, just wide awake, like, oh, I need to do this, 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 and this. And I'm like writing all these things down. No, I'm one of those people that even when I'm sleeping, I'm thinking about what I have to do, what I need to accomplish. How do I get to this point? What do I need to do to get this done? It's horrible. I wish I could turn my thoughts off. Just at least one night a week would be awesome. And I don't want to take anything. I don't like pills. So it's like, but yeah, I think I get a little bit more than 70,000. It always hits me in the middle of the night.
You know what? I'm going to, you know, suggest that whilst the average person has maybe 70, you probably have 150.
I think I do it. My brain will not stop.
You know, what's interesting talking about, you know, thinking whilst you're sleeping, you know, most people, you know, think that when you're asleep that nothing really happens. Actually, that's when your brain is incredibly active. It's very, very creative in that time.
I always heard that when you're sleeping, your subconscious deals with the things that you don't have the time to think of when you are conscious. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, think about it, is that when you're consciously aware of all these different things, that's an active filter against, you know, other processes or mental processes that are happening as well. And so the challenge that we have is that we have a lot of, you know, thoughts and ideas and beliefs and values sometimes are in, you know, conflict or in misalignment with the world around us. But we deny ourselves, we filter those out, but the unconscious mind is still working on them. And so that's what dreams are also a lot about, is that opportunity, you know, for your brain to process things that consciously you're not ready to deal with. And so it kind of gives you glimpses of things that you want to know. And once you've comfortable with dealing with certain things, and these are typically traumas. I mean, we've all been traumatized in one way or another. And you know, just like, you know, when you're a baby and, you know, somebody's kind of teasing you with a bottle and you really want the bottle and they take it away from you, that's a trauma. I mean, as an adult playing with a child thinking that's funny to a little baby who was really hungry and crying, that's not funny.
Yeah.
And that's a trauma. I mean, there's so many traumas that we have. So if you subconsciously, or when you're sleeping, a lot's happening. You're creating a lot of neural pathways, neural network, new links. I mean, that's where you're very creative.
Really?
Interesting enough, there's a story about Einstein, for example, and also Edison, that their most creative moments is when they were able to tap into their unconscious. And Edison had this strategy where he would hold an object in his hands, whether it was a stone or something else, I'm not sure what it was. And as he would fall asleep, you know, his hand would relax. As he was going into that unconscious state, then he would drop the object to the floor. That would make a huge sound. He would suddenly wake up. And then he could tap into remember, you know, or recall what that unconscious mind was processing.
Oh,
and
wow.
Found that that was a very effective way to be creative.
I think that would just make me angry because I'm like, finally, I'm falling asleep and I decide to wake myself up again. Seriously?
Yeah, with all your thoughts, you know, you want to turn them off.
Seriously? I have so much. My mind is always just...
Well, you're a smart person. What would you expect? You're very creative.
Thank you. Well, the funny thing is, like, I will wake up and I'll be reciting lines from a movie that I was in 5 years ago, just to see if I remember it.
You know what you should do, since you're so really good at recording, you just record yourself at night. You know, I've done that before.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really weird. I listen to my snoring.
I hope I don't snore. That would be kind of funny.
That's really funny. You should try it sometime. Maybe we can compare.
You know, somebody said I giggle in my sleep.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So I guess if I think something's funny, I'll giggle in my sleep, yeah.
So are you giggling about other people or things?
Huh?
Are you giggling about other people or things?
I don't know. I don't know. I just... Maybe I just laugh a lot. I think, you know, you have to be positive in life and always think about the best. So I think in my dreams, I always consciously try to dream in a certain way, more positive instead of negative. I'm always aware of my dreams when I wake up in the morning. And while I am dreaming, I find myself consciously controlling it to go the way I want. so it's in a better light. You know what I mean? Like with nightmares, you know, we all have nightmares. And so like in my sleep, when that happens, I'm like, okay, well, let's veer off. This isn't good. And so, and it took me a long time to be able to control that. Mm-hmm. You know, do you do that too?
Actually, I do it all the time. But I also do it throughout the day, because what you do is actually very, very clever. And this is part of what that brain intelligence is. You're really directing your brain to go in a certain direction. Mm-hmm. I think what happens so often, so many people make a decision in life, they just stick with it, they forgot what that decision is, and they just keep on doing the same thing over and over again, and they're pretty much unconscious. Mm-hmm. Whereas what you're doing is absolutely brilliant, because you're pretty much determining what's that next step, what's that next journey every single day. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting then is that, you know, when people get these sudden downloads of creative ideas, you know, they get this brainwave where suddenly light goes off. I mean, light, that just doesn't happen by random either. It's because you're directing your unconscious mind to process something. Mm-hmm. And so the more that you consciously do that, so sort of look, for example, if there's a problem that you have or challenge that you have, you need a solution, and you go to sleep, you're getting prepared to go to sleep, and you tell yourself, okay, let's figure this one out. And the more specific you are, the better it is. Mm-hmm. Your unconscious mind will process that. It will create all these different links. And, you know, you'll suddenly wake up and say, oh my gosh, I got the answer. I know what to do now. I mean, that happens to you, I'm sure, a lot, doesn't mm-hmm. it?
It does. It does. It's wonderful, too. I solve a lot of problems in my sleep.
What's that?
I solve a lot of problems in my sleep. It's awesome.
Well, and I know you've got a lot of problems.
not as many as a lot of people, I think. Yeah, everybody's problems are different. Mine are is that I have so many creative things that I want to do, but I'm trying to get them all done at the exact same time. So it's really just compartmentalizing my time and my creativity towards what's most important to me. And that's hard, because there's so many things I want to accomplish. There's so many things left to accomplish, and it feels like I have so little time. So I just full force at the things that mean the most to me, and, you know, just go for it.
You see, I mean, again, I mean, you're a smart person, and, you know, when you talk about problems, you know, when you talk about a mathematical problem.
Oh, I love math. I love math.
Yeah, I love math too.
Oh, awesome.
There's no emotion behind a mathematical problem.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is the way that we perceive problems in our culture is that it's all negative. And so one of the things that I like to, you know, tell myself, and again, it's language, mm-hmm. what words that we get to use, you know, determine the emotions that we get to experience as well, is these are learning, you know, experiences or just creative opportunities. You know, these aren't problems. These are just ways to become more of yourself and who you want to be. Because if you didn't have these things in your life, if you didn't attract these things in your life, mm-hmm. then you're probably not directing your energy to become, you know, more in your life. You're just doing the same thing day in, day out, and probably don't even realize that you're really unhappy.
Well, it sounds like stagnant. I mean, nobody wants to have a stagnant life. And if you're not pushing yourself and pushing your creativity and pushing what you believe, what you want, what you know, if you're not constantly pushing yourself, you're going to get stagnant, and you're not going to change. You're not going to learn. You're going to be in the same place every day.
But so many people live that way. You know, so many people, you know, there's a concept of cause and effect. And this is a concept, you know, from neuro-linguistic programming, which is basically our brain strategies, our neural strategies, how it is that we do what we do. But the concept is cause and effect. Are you going to be at cause in your life, creating the effect, or are you going to be at the effect of your environment? And there's an estimate that says 97% of the population is really at the effect of the world around them. Mm-hmm. And most people simply don't have a what we call a compelling future, you know, that they're actually aware of. And this is a concept that I learned from an incredible guy by the name of Steve Linder from Strategic Brain. Anybody wants to find more about how they can be the most of themselves, you know, look at strategicbrain.com. And here, you know, the compelling future, it's that passion that you have for something in particular. Like, you have a lot of passion. Mm-hmm. You've got all these ideas that you want to do. You've got a phenomenal, compelling future, and you're driven to get that. Mm-hmm. But most people don't. It's interesting. And I was kind of sort of in that trap too for a while, because I made this decision that I wanted to be a doctor. Mm-hmm. And I knew that was a long path to get there. And so I just went in and it's sort of like, okay, I made my decision. Now I'm on track. Now I'm on, you know, automatic pilot for, what was it, 17 years of training. And wow. Fortunately, I still had a lot of interest outside of that. But when it came just to that, I was just an automatic pilot. I mean, I saw my starting point right here. And then 17 years later, I realized, okay, I'm going to get to the finish line. And then what?
Well, you know, I was in, I don't know if you want to call it in a bit of a funk, but I was that way too for a while. I started college when I was 16. So by the time I was 18, I'm a graduate gemologist. And so I started working for a diamond grading firm. And I spent years behind a microscope grading diamonds. And then, you know, I got into designing jewelry and all that. And, you know, it was nice. But then when I looked around me, everybody was miserable. It's because everybody did the same thing every day. And it got to the point where, you know, I'd have a hold a, you know, 12 karat diamond in my hand. I'm looking at it like, it's a diamond, you know? And when at first I'm like, oh my God, look at the diamonds, you know? And now I'm like, I really don't give a care. But the thing is, it took me a while to realize, like, yeah, when I was 12, I said, I'm going to be a graduate gemologist. I want to be a gemologist. I want to grade stones. And I did it. And it was boring. It was so boring. And so I left and I basically took the biggest risk ever and just went to something that made me happy. And that's how I got into the acting and the modeling and radio and the singing and now producing and being a studio director and all that. But I'm happy. And it's because things are always changing. I'm not stagnant. And I think what people do is they get really so engrossed in what they're doing, not realizing the whole world is changing and they're not. And it took me a while to realize that I needed to get out. I needed to do something better, something more creative, something that challenged me, because sitting and staring at diamonds all day, that's not a challenge. It's boring.
Well, but you didn't know that when you were 12.
I didn't know that. I thought it was the best thing in the world. You know, I grew up with my mom working at Walmart, you know, she still does. And so my family wasn't necessarily the most educated. So they really did not understand me. They still don't understand me. They're still trying to figure out why I turned out the way I did, because I'm completely different from all 8 of my brothers and sisters. My parents don't understand me. Nobody understands me.
Well, remember, you have also different programming.
That's true. And I've learned you got to keep overcoming, keep moving, keep going. And I can't sit still. That would totally drive me insane. And yeah, so I guess I used my, how would you say that? I used my parents and my surroundings as a kid to help inspire me to keep growing as a person. And I'm not saying my parents are bad. My parents are wonderful. My mom is very, just an awesome lady. But I take control of my life. I don't let people control me. So if I don't like something, I'm not going to be like, I'm not going to pout. I'm going to change it. If I'm not happy with the way my life is going, I'm going to change it. I'm not going to just expect for life to happen. I'm going to make it happen. Because if you don't, you're stuck. I just went on this weird tangent. Sorry about that.
What?
I just went on this weird tangent. Sorry about that.
No, that's perfect. This is what this is about. I mean, you know, I don't want to be the one talking all the time. It's kind of fun to hear everybody else. And that's the whole point. You know, just hearing what makes other people successful. Mm-hmm. Because what you just described is really an example of what so many people are undergoing, is that you have this concept, this idea of this fantasy, if you will, this dream of, okay, I'm going to be a gemologist and this is what this is going to be. So you've already got this preconceived notions of what they are. And then at some point, you know, maybe that was like that for a while. Mm-hmm. And maybe it was fantastical and exciting for a certain period of time, which I'm sure it was. But then at a given point, then it wasn't fun anymore. It wasn't exciting anymore. Mm-hmm. It was just the same thing over and over again. And on the one hand, certainty is really important in our lives. We need this consistency in our lives. We need to know that when we step into a building or get into an elevator, it's going to be safe and everything else. But on the flip side, is that we need the excitement, we need the surprise, we need the variety in our life as well. Because if you're going to do the same thing every single day, you know, it's actually going to fry your brain because you get so incredibly bored. There is a center in the brain that's called the seeking center. And it's the only part of the brain that cannot ever be satisfied, in the sense of, you know, when you know, you eat too much, say, candy, for example, or too much sweet, and after a while you don't taste it anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, and so the body has this ability to what we call adaptation. So with when the stimulus is, you know, sufficient enough, then the body doesn't notice it anymore. But there's one part of the brain that will never be satisfied that way, and that's the seeking sense, where we always want to grow. We're always looking for more things. We're always exploring.
Where is that? Is it in the frontal lobe? Where is that in the brain?
I think it's in the limbic brain.
Okay.
In the limbic area. I'm not exactly sure where that is.
Okay.
And I'm more of a big concept kind of guy, because I get sometimes lost in details, and quite frankly, I don't remember them either. But it's probably in that area. It could be in the frontal, but I think it's more in the limbic center, because that's an area that generates a lot of our emotions, a lot of our instincts, and all of our reflex responses. And so, you know, with so many people, what happens is that they are also governed by fear. You know, I mean, life actually begins once you get out of your comfort zone, just like you're discussing or presenting earlier, taking those risks, getting out there, trying something new. Mm-hmm. But so many people are just so fearful of that, they just stick with what they know, because for a lot of different reasons, which we're not going to go into. And then they go through their entire life, and it's really not that exciting.
Mm-hmm. I know. I love it that people take risks. Yeah, and like you were saying at the beginning of the show, you know, when you are older and you don't want to look back on your life and think, wow, I wish I would have done that, or I wish I had the strength to try this, or I wish, you know what? Do it. Try it. If you made a mistake, if you fail, you have a great story for when you're old. If you succeed, you even have a greater story. Just live life. It's too short to not take chances and to not do what your heart tells you to.
That's exactly right. And that's what got me stuck, because I realized, okay, you know, this is going to be a long journey, you know, before I graduate. And, you know, I was very particular because I wanted to be a great surgeon. So I really want to make sure I learned all the things, mm-hmm. and going way beyond than what the typical person would learn as a plastic surgeon, which I'm very grateful for, because it's also positioned me in a way that is incredibly unique. My platform right now is not just plastic surgery, but it's also energy medicine. It's also brain intelligence. It's also wellness in general. Mm-hmm. And what's great is, as you know, I'm working with one of the best companies in professional business and life coaching. And so it's given me access to so many different dimensions, sort of like what you're doing. I mean, you know, you're an actress, you're a model, you're a producer, you're a writer, you're a singer, all these different things. And that's what actually makes life so exciting.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
You love it, right? It gets a little chaotic sometimes too, doesn't it?
Oh boy, does it. A lot of times I feel like I'm getting pulled in so many different directions, because as I'm doing this, I'm loving it. But then I have people who, how do you say, like they leech onto me and then try to take what I've worked for and what I've worked on for years. And they're just, yeah. So that's kind of hard is when that happens. And other things, like I help out so many different charities. I do red carpet events. I do the runway shows. I do this. And then, you know, sometimes I dedicate too much of my time to helping out these charities, which I love. But at the end, I get worn out and just, you know, I'll go 3 months without a day off. And then once I hit it, that day off, I'm down in a pile. I can't move. I'm just out. And then the next day I'm up and I'm running again. So I need to learn how to slow down enough where I can heal myself and keep myself good, so I can still help others instead of just wearing myself too thin.
You know, and that's an interesting thing what you're saying, because what you're doing really, and this is part of the brain intelligence, you're running a very specific program that's looking to satisfy or fulfill certain needs of yours. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is that, you know, the way that I always like to frame it is that, you know, when there's a disturbance inside of you, and you know that, because it just feels awkward, there's something missing, or mm-hmm. there's maybe too much of this or whatever. It's just like when you eat too much, or you don't eat enough, or you eat something you don't like, your body is very aware of that. And so when you're also acknowledging yourself and being aware of where you're at emotionally or spiritually, however you want to put it, And that's a great time to ask yourself, what's going on right now? You know, what's true? What is it that I'm focusing on? You know, what does this mean? What can I do about this? And unfortunately, what happens then is that when you don't have enough reference points to really understand this, then you also don't really know what to do that's best for you. So you keep on doing the same thing over and over again until you crash. Mm-hmm. And so what I do as a life coach, and, you know, I'm not coaching right now, by the way, but, you know, I'm available if you want.
Okay.
is, you know, really to start looking at that and ask, you know, and asking the right questions. This is what I love about life coaching. Life coaching is not mentoring. It's not counseling. Like a lot of people think, it's not me telling you from my model of the world. You know, I'm not a girl and I'm not blonde. Well, I used to be blonde, so
yeah. That would work. Hey, blondes have more fun.
Yeah, exactly. And we think a lot faster and more than anyone else. But.
Yes, we do. So, and we have to draw our eyebrows in because it looks like we don't have any because our hair is so blonde.
Okay.
Oh, see, you're lucky. You have eyebrows. Mine are so freaking blonde. It's horrible.
See, my hair used to be that white. Just like this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll show you a picture one day.
I want to see. Yeah.
That was a long time ago. But what I was saying is that. When, you know, it's just understanding, you know, what is it that you can ask? Well, let me rephrase it. It's asking the right questions so that you actually come up with the right answers. Mm. And it's not me telling you what the answer is, but it's me asking the right questions. Because the best part of me as a coach is, if I were your coach right now, the thing that I would tell you, that the best thing about me is that I'm not you. And helping you see things that you're otherwise blind to. And there's not something that you're wrong, you know, there's just something wrong with you. But then also the benefit of having that coach is that these people are also dedicated, if it's a good coach, to really constantly grow, constantly being exposed to more stuff, more resources, more ideas, more insights, so that as much as they don't may necessarily implement it for themselves, they can help people get access to those things. And it's really all about that. Again, it's what you don't know that you don't know. And that's what's so brilliant about, you know, brain intelligence. And what I love about Strategic Brain with Steve Linder is helping understand the nuances of the programs that we're using, the nuances of the strategies that we're using, so that we can totally change our lives and change the lives of other people.
I like that.
It is cool, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a completely different point of view. And I really didn't even think about that. It's like if I was coaching you, I mean, I'm completely different from you. So it'd be very interesting to see how that goes.
Yeah. I mean, you have a whole different perspective on life that has served you very well. You've had different kinds of experiences. And then simply, you know, bring those to light. In my case, if you were coaching me, you could say, hey, well, what about this? And I will have said, well, I've never thought of that. That might work, and that's amazing. But here's where the intelligence, and today we're only talking about brain intelligence. That's, oh yeah, so we have about 10 more minutes. So I think I'm going to reserve some of the other things for next time, which is stem cells, which is great.
Stem cell research?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's where I'm at right now.
It's going to be good. I just love learning from you. It's like, oh, my God. Okay, what are we going to talk about today?
So, and I'll give you a little, taste of stem cells in a moment, actually. But when it comes to, you know, since we've been talking about brain intelligence, what I think is fascinating is simply this, that when we talk about our cells, right, you got 70 trillion cells. And what's interesting, too, mind you, is that we have, you know, this is kind of a freaky thing, but we actually have 10 times more microorganisms in our body than the cells that we have. So if we have 70 trillion of my own cells, I have 700 trillion microorganisms. In other words, bugs.
Wow.
Yeah. And you got more. I think you got like 150,000.
I shower today. I should have some less. No. Bad joke.
But here's what's interesting. You know, when you look at a cell, I mean, what is the purpose of the cell? The purpose of cells is to survive, is to live, right? And also to duplicate and create more cells. And each of the cells have a very specific function. So like we have 200 different types of cells in our body. They all have different kinds of functions. But the cell's purpose is to survive, is to live. And so the natural tendency of a cell, because a cell doesn't have a brain in a sense, but the natural tendency of a cell is to move towards things that's good for them and move away from things that is not. I mean, studies have shown this when we look at microbes and everything else that are brainless. They have that inner intelligence, but they're brainless. And that's what happens. Something, you know, same thing with us as human beings. You know, we gravitate to things that we like and that we're comfortable with, and we move away from things that we're not comfortable with. And so, and people, it's interesting how people are so critical about this, is that it doesn't make any sense. I mean, if you like something, you move towards it. If you don't like something, you move away. There's some innate, you know, thinking or programming going on that, you know, just have to trust it. But what's interesting with a cell is that every cell has what we call a nucleus, and that's, everybody's called that the brain. Well, it's not a brain either. All the nucleus is, it's a bunch of genes, probably about, what's it, 22,000 genes, 97% of which we don't even know what they do. And, but genes aren't a brain either. And what we realized after the DNA was discovered many, many years ago, back in the 50s, I think, earlier than that, that there are a lot of proteins surrounding the genes. And it's the proteins, the interaction of the proteins around the genes that cause the cell to function in a certain way. So, for example, moving towards something or moving away from something. And so when you think about it, when you really analyze it and understand, now we're talking not just body intelligence, but really I'm still about brain intelligence, it's simply this. Every cell responds to just the environment around it. Think about it. No, a cell simply responds to whatever is happening around the cell. It's all that happens. So there's really only three things that happen. One is trauma. So trauma, injury, whatever, that's it hurts the environment around. And the other one are the environmental toxins, which there's about 350,000 different environmental toxins around this. So those are affecting our cells, as well as the internal toxins. I don't know how many internal toxins. But the final thing, when you think about it, are thoughts. Because all our thoughts, when you really analyze them, they're just a bunch of chemical interactions, electrical interactions, energetic interactions, but manifesting itself in chemistry, and those also affect your cells. So whenever, you know, your thoughts, and that's why, you know, so many people talk about, you know, all diseases are more mental than not. Well, quite frankly, every disease has a very large, if not mental component to it, because our brain affects everything.
So it affects how our cells treat what's negative. Okay, that makes sense.
So look at happy people. I mean, yeah, can happy people get sick? Yeah, sure they can get sick, because there's so many other factors that are involved as well. But when you look at people that are really happy, just generally they're doing so much better than everybody else. And if they were to get sick, just their perspective on life makes it so much easier. I mean, you see these people that have 98% burn over their body, and they do incredible things in life. You have people that, you know, there's certain kinds of diseases that have a very short lifespan. And, you know, there's examples of people that do incredibly well, live longer than expected. Why? Just because they're choosing, just like you, to have a positive attitude towards the environment around you. And so it's amazing how our thoughts can affect us. There have been case reports where people were diagnosed with something and subsequently died very quickly because of that disease, only to find out that they didn't have that disease. But they were told they had it. And this is unfortunate with, and I see it all the time, and it has to be a criticism of how we practice medicine today, is that so many doctors are very quick to make a judgment, make a diagnosis, and it's the culture around us that's requiring us to be very quick and efficient about it. But then, you know, too often they get just so inflexible with that diagnosis. They're also very inconsiderate, and I can say this because I'm a physician, very inconsiderate with the human experience that the person's having that is receiving that information. And it can be incredibly traumatic. And there are case reports that people have been diagnosed with some sort of disease, and then they subsequently die thinking they had this disease, only to find out that they didn't have it. And then you have people that were diagnosed really properly to have fatal diseases, but they just changed their whole mindset about it. And yeah, sure, they did other things, healthy things, but totally reversed, you know, fatal, you know, cancer situations. And they're still alive 20, 23 years later.
Wow.
So the power of the mind is huge. And that's why tapping into that brain intelligence, not denying it, not ignoring it, which so many people do. And I think there's a big fear around that because people are so scared about, you know, this idea of finding out who they really are or finding out who they're not.
That's actually kind of scary, to figure who you are, you know?
I'm sorry, what? You broke up there for a second. What?
Sometimes it's kind of scary to figure out who you truly are.
You know, but that, for me, that's exciting. For me, you know, when I was in med school and I started reading all the Greek classics, all the different philosophers and everything else, and realized that I wasn't smart enough to kind of decipher all that, so I let it go. But just the whole advent of personal growth is just so incredible, all that information out there. And actually, you look at old temples, for example. I can't remember, you know, which one it was, but old temples centuries ago, and on the doorway, you know, and on the headstone of the doorway, it says, "Know thyself."
Mm.
So this is not something new. I mean, look at Buddha, look at, you know, Lao Tzu, look at Rumi, all these people centuries ago, you know, wanting to discover who we really are and helping people on that process. And what was relevant and true then is true now.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But you're an example of that. I mean, you just said yourself, you know, what, I go to sleep with an intention. And I manifest that.
Mm-hmm.
And so brain medicine, brain intelligence, it's a very much evolving thing. Right now it's just coaching. Right now it's counseling. Right now it's psychoanalysis. I mean, from the learnings from Freud and Jung that, you know, are incredibly revolutionary and have changed, you know, so many of the concepts of how we look at things today. You know, it's incumbent in all of us to simply become more aware of who we are. How many minutes do I have left? Like three?
Three,
okay. So, and that's what's exciting because, you know, you can change yourself in a heartbeat. It's like what Tony Robbins always talks about. You can change yourself, you can change your state in a moment. You know, if you're in a happy state and, you know, somebody comes by and spills, say, wine over your pants, you know, and you're happy, then you kind of ignore it, right? It's not a big deal. And you're a happy person, which is great. And I love the way that you laugh all the way because it really tells a lot about a person. And I can't wait for the recordings, by the way.
I think that's going to be fun.
I'm not going to share my story. Well, if you share your giggles with me, then I'll share my story.
You're snoring?
You. Yeah, it's really quite funny.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. I just got to figure out a way that'll record like the whole night. I mean, tossing and turning, laughing, tossing and turning, laughing, and then wake up.
You know, they've got those sleep monitoring devices.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a way to kind of figure that out. You know, you can basically time. We actually sleep in 90-minute cycles. Did you know that?
Oh, I didn't know that. Huh.
Yeah, we go through a whole mental process. I mean, take away few minutes here and there, but it's typically 90 minutes. And so actually when you schedule your sleeping, it should actually be in 90 minute segments.
So like if I take a nap, that's an hour, I should make it a little bit longer?
Well, naps are different.
Oh yeah?
Naps are different because, and there's a lot of research about this, the most ideal nap is anywhere between 2 and 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Oh. And it is about 20, 30 minutes max.
Okay.
And that's when you get refreshed and you get rejuvenated. When it's about 30 or 40 minutes, up to 60 minutes, then it's more about the mental processes that are happening. But what happens when you go that long and you wake up, you're actually even more tired than you were before.
Oh, wow.
And then 90 minutes is probably, you know, the absolute best to really reprocess everything.
Mm-hmm.
But who's got 90 minutes halfway through the day to take a nap?
I sure don't. I'm here. So I'm here or I'm on set. That was really funny. I'm like, oh, wait, hold on my scene. Hold on, wait. I'll be right back in 90 minutes.
No, actually, there's these really cool programs. There's a great program called Pizzizz, P-Z-I-Z-Z. You can look it up on the internet. And it's a 20-minute energizer. And so it's a guided meditation, gets you into sleep. It's a really cool voice and that you get to hear, just guiding you. And then you fall asleep, and it wakes you up in 20 minutes, completely refreshed. It's almost like you slept a couple hours.
Nice. Okay, Pizzizz. I'm going to try that. Pizzizz.
So I guess this is our time. So, well, this has been a great talk. It's nice and spontaneous. And I hope, you know, the listeners enjoy these kinds of talks, because it's really about generating new ideas, new voices, new perspectives that really can change your life. So changing that prescription. So you're designing or defining, discovering the prescription that's right for you, because that prescription is going to manifest in life by your design, living the life that you desire. So I'm Dr. Bart Rademacher, and together with Wendy.
Yeah.
Tonight's been exciting. Prescription for transformation, hashtag real people, hashtag real conversations. I'm going to be in Portland next week, and hopefully I'll have a fantastic crew of different interviewees. I'll let you know. And until next time.
Thanks for listening to Dr. Rademacher's Prescription for Transformation. Join Dr. Bart Rademacher live right here on Radio Star Worldwide each week or on demand 24/7.